This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Steve Brooks. I'm here with John Abel, Vice President, Cloud Innovation for UK, Ireland, Israel at Oracle. John, we're here in Southampton during the build-up to the Cow's Leg of CLGP. CLGP is supported by Oracle technology. Can you explain a little about CLGP and how the technology is supporting it?
It's a great question. I mean, it's a beautiful day down here in Cowes. Just done my weather forecast for the weekend. It's a bit turbulent tomorrow on Saturday. What I like about CLGP, it's a small number of teams. It's six teams, and they're named by country, the Great Britain, United States, and obviously Japan, etc. The key thing about this event is most competitive athletes, the technology is the advantage they have. What CLGP's goal is the technology is equal across all teams. The boats are the same across all teams. All teams see each other's data. Every team has the same capabilities. Every bit of R&D that's done is equally pushed across each of the teams. What it means is at the event, the only differentiator is the athlete. And that's unique in a team sport. If you think of Tour de France that's just completed or the Formula One, the data is a guarded secret because it gives a huge competitive edge. In CLGP, data is shared with everyone. Obviously, the human data, that's the athlete's data, isn't, but that's part of their advantage as athletes. But it's a unique sport for there's no way that a team can use technology outside of the athlete to make a competitive advantage.
You talk about the data being equal, and I understand that. You've got a lot of sensors on every boat. But surely it's also about how the analytics is applied to that data. So is that consistent across each boat?
Each boat has the same data sources. So the 1,200 data points that comes from the boats, every team gets access to. Just like the athlete, how their data scientist actually uses the data is unique to the team. If that data scientist is working as part of the team, again, the human being the data scientist gives a competitive edge because they saw something in the data, then that's their competitive edge. But the piece that I like about it is it's always the human that's making the competitive edge, not the technology that is informing the human as such. Them coming up with a totally new hull design doesn't happen in the F50 category. They're all equal.
I understand that the data is also shared not just from their boat, but to every other boat.
Absolutely. Every boat in the water real time gets the availability of every other boat's data. That means they can technically plot. Because you think about most sailing events, it's quite difficult to position which boat is in the lead. Just because a boat is taking a longer route means that they could go faster. What we're already found in the data is that the boats that are actually making the best adaptive of the environment are the sailors, because they haven't got time to interact with the data scientist. These are the fastest sail boats that are actually competitive. Already these boats can achieve 50 knots of speed, and hopefully this weekend they will beat that. When you've got two boats travelling at that pace, the last thing that the crew are thinking about is a data scientist say, right, at the next one, at this point, turn left. They're having to use their natural resources. But after the event, the way they interpret the data, or before the event, can give them an idea of how they react to certain teams. And that's the exciting bit, is when they're on the water, they're having to make the human course of direction. When they're actually back before or after the event, then they can do the analysis. But that's like any other sport.
How is this analogous to business? Because Oracle don't just sell technology to sailing boat crews.
Yes. The first thing I like about this project is there's many connections with business. The first thing is they are a business. They use our NetSuite product for running their own applications, which again is a great exemplar of how a small company that's obviously got a large visibility can make an impact using Oracle SaaS. Then if you think about a lot of businesses, specifically manufacturing, they're into IoT devices, connected devices. We're starting to see autonomous cars. We've got 1,200 data points coming from these boats, which is exactly the same IoT technology that you could find in a lot of other industries. Then the way that they're analysing the data and making the unknown known for a competitive advantage is the same as every other enterprise is desperately trying to do. The difference with this, which I love, is if you think about it, within the space of small sprints, they've created what we're going to be seeing this weekend, what we've seen all of the other races that's happened. And that's the exciting bit, is they're continuously R&Ding and researching using the data, and they share that across all teams equally, which gives them a collaboration, which is what enterprises are desperate to do. But when they're in the act of the competition, then they have isolation of success, which is a really nice outcome. And there's many businesses that could learn from this in being agile, connected devices, and also using SaaS solutions to get business back office applications working efficiently.
In some ways, are you arguing that each of the teams almost represents a department within an organization, all focused towards the strategic goal of making, in their case, the F50 as fast as possible?
Correct. So if you think about most organizations, we talk about gamification, where we will set a number of teams the same activity to be performed to see which one comes up with the best results. There is no difference with CellGP. It's gamification in a sport. It's basically fantastic athletes working as a team on a boat going into uncharted territory, because every race has got different conditions, meaning that they're going to have to use their capabilities of being a creator as a human rather than an industrialized engine. If you say to an enterprise customer what their biggest weakness is lack of creativity. If you can take one thing from this great event, is what we've done is really showcasing the great creativity of the athletes using the technologies, the industrialization of that, for them to have an equal footing.
You mentioned autonomous cars earlier. Where does the autonomous database fit into all this? Because you've not mentioned that, and it's one of the big buzzwords that Oracle has at the moment.
It's a good point, actually, and I'm glad you referenced autonomous before me. That's quite rare, so that's nice. The thing we need to talk about is the tech stack that we use on this solution. We've got two types of data. There's multiple types of data, but there's two specific types of data categories. One is the video relay imaging that comes off the helicopters that are flying about the boat. That's obviously globally shared through CellGP. That uses a specific network to go back into studios, etc. All of that data is stored on Diva, which is our solution for handling media assets, which is great. The second type of data is the one that uses autonomous. So these boats have 1,200 data points coming off them real time. That then real time goes back into a centralized autonomous solution that we have in the cloud. That then allows us to use different interface points. Today, the team have a app that you can download that interacts with it to show fans actually graphically where the boats are. Because again, it's very hard to see from shore or TV who's winning what. Also, it gives the other press syndicate an app that shows them key data points, the fastest speed, the wind tack, the teams that are going the fastest at that point, the teams that are taking the longest course, the teams that are taking the shortest course, etc. Valuable information. And then the last one is obviously the teams themselves. They get access to this data. Exciting this weekend, and you're going to be the first to know about this. You've got the honour of this. We decided to step up the competition. I've got coming down on Friday afternoon several before career, several new to career, and several experienced in career to run two sprints, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. So a one-day sprint. People would call it a hackathon. We're not calling it that. We call it a sprint. What they do, they've never seen the data before Saturday morning. They will get tomorrow at 2 p.m. the challenge. I'm not going to say what the challenge is today because that will give them a heads up. But they're going to get two challenges. They will get a briefing from one of the data scientists from the GB team on how to understand the data. And then by Saturday, the first challenge has to be answered. And by Sunday, the second challenge has to be answered. One of the goals that we have got for them, but it's not the exact challenge, is can they start predicting the winner before the winner actually goes across the line? We're going to be using machine learning to start predicting, using all the previous data sets, which boat, using the techniques they're using, should likely win first. But they're going to get very specific challenges as teams to go and answer.
One of the things about this is that CellGP is looking at live data from the boat, and decisions are being made, not necessarily on the boat in that race, but they're being made in preparation for the next race. Yeah. In a business environment, there is far more data out there that's important. You did mention weather earlier, but environmental data, for example, market data. And businesses need to consider all the other data that's out there. How should a business look at this challenge? Not just about collecting their IoT data, surely.
When I look at data, one of the things that's coming out at the moment is this term that's called multimodal, which is the ability to store different types of data. So it could be graph, relational, could be document orientated. Some people call it polyglot persistence, which is different types of data. Every organization has lots of multi-data, has lots of polyglot type data. The challenge is most of those are evaluated what I call down the T. So they go down the application to the data. What we're doing with SailGP is we're flipping it on the head. If you think about it, you're absolutely right that the boat has IoT sensors. The athletes have their own sensors. There is open data for tidal patterns, weather, pollution, wind. Everything's available open under the open data that the government have. Having that data loaded next to the collected data, if an enterprise then started to use its cherished data, could be the way that they've sold, the way that they do their financial reporting, could be the way they look at their products, they could then start going across the top of the T. Rather than doing a vertical look at the world, actually doing a horizontal look at the world and start predicting using that intelligence in a much more meaningful impact for either reducing cost or increasing profit. Because if you look at what most enterprise customers have, their biggest weapon against the unknown competitor is experience. The challenge with experience is we generally associate with humans or knowledge, but actually the data they've collected over the years gives them huge knowledge of the possibilities for the future. One of the things that we're very proud of Oracle is autonomous is one of those exact type of solutions. So autonomous came to life because we knew through 40 plus years of data heritage or data cherished relationship with our customers that we can understand the typical issues and problems they have through scaling, performance tuning, through manageability and patching. And using a AI-driven autonomous database means that Inquizitly knows you're using it in this way. I should patch it, heal it, scale it, maintain it in this way to suit your usage. That's where the industry is going. If you look at the biggest growth companies on the market, it's because they understand the data that they have the best.
Can you give me an example of a business that is using the Oracle technology stack?
We've got a number of good examples. The one that I really like is the NHS BSA project. It's a reference that you can find on your favourite search engine. What they did there is exactly my scenario. They have many isolated silos of data. What they did is the data scientists there went across the horizontal to look at all data aspects. They were then looking for savings of prescriptions and drugs, etc. If we said that there is a saving to make on a single drug of a penny, it wouldn't mean much. But when you go across the horizontal in the NHS, they've identified in excess of £700 million of savings. That's a great example of a use case that has been very, very successful, and it's for the better good for UK. That's a nice public reference that you can find out about that's actually achieved this. There's various articles online that you can read, and there's various videos that you can watch to understand it more.
You're talking about learning from historical data, but there is a risk, surely, that A, data gets dated and it's no longer valid, and B, that data might be more of a data swamp rather than a data links in the first place. So is it actually good data or bad data?
It's a good point, actually, that when you look at data, the way I always explain to a non-technologist, and there may be some non-technologists looking at this, the challenge with data is the technology is getting more capability all the time, and specific areas like machine learning that we're focused on is actually meaning the way you mine the data is very similar to how people might have been mining coal in the past or fossil fuels, where they started off by scraping the landscape, then they started digging tunnels, then they started using drills, and then they started getting very accurate on natural resources. If your data is aging, it doesn't mean it's bad. What it means is the context in the way you use it has to be specific. So you might have released an old product. The old product may have not been successful. When you used your classical tools of analytics, you still didn't see the inherent needle in the haystack that said why it wasn't successful. As the technology increases, specifically through machine learning, artificial intelligence and deep learning, you're going to see new patterns that gives you new insights. Just because that specific use case of data isn't relevant, the lessons you could learn from some of the observations, the subtleties of it, may be intrinsically important for future products.
I agree with that point. The point I was trying to make was there's twofold. One is historic data can age, and secondly, historic data, and in fact current data, isn't always accurate. And they're two separate points, surely.
Absolutely, because you're covering something else that's the biggest challenge, which is temporal. The age of the data at that point, is it relevant to the business? If I said to the sailors this weekend, right, when we get all this data points off next month, I'll give you the results. They're going to say, well, okay, thanks, we'll find someone else. They want it here and now. But then when they leave here and they go to Marseille, the data from here, some elements, it just are not of use anymore. A business has to know its data assets. One of the things I'd like to see happen in the future is we've got a fantastic, loyal, intrinsic customer base. And specifically in that customer base, we've got a specific function called the database administrator. What I would like to see is those database administrators becoming the data asset officers. They inherently know the cadence and velocity of data. They know the importance of the data to the business. But actually, their jobs going forward are going to morph in to be data asset officers. Because what we want them to do is understand the clinical worth, either through the profit or loss of the organization, of that data. Because as you said, it could be out of date, so it's not worth a lot. It could be in date and worth a lot. But the data asset officer has to understand it.
This sounds great, but not every organization knows where to start. We talk about Oracle, and we thought, oh, it's huge, complex technology. You're talking about IoT, thousands of data. I can't cope. I don't know where to start. What are the first steps an organization should consider taking? And there are probably multiple paths to that. So just give me one example, maybe.
So the first thing a company has to realize before they even look at data, what are they famous for now? And what are they famous for in the future? And be really clear on that statement. No company should just start a data lake because it sounds good. Because inherently, the people using it won't know what the exam question they need to answer. The first thing I always say to a customer is, what are you famous for? And then when they tell me, then I say, what are you going to be famous for in the future? 3 years, 5 years out. When you've got those two aspects, you've now got a lens. And then you say, what data do you have today that empirically impacts those two strategies, the here and now and the future? And they will say, well, we've got this data, but we don't understand it. We've got this data we don't have or we need. And we've got this data we might have to create. Then what you do is very simplistically focus in on those data technologies or those data containers and then start picturing them, how they're going to morph in either capability or the way they're going to morph in the way of usage. And then identify what are you trying to get the experts to look at. If you look at what the NHS did, the team they had that worked on it in the initial phases to prove that there was value in doing it was three people. They had a data asset officer or data scientist. They had a business expert that knew what they were going to be famous for. And they had a technologist. Any company in the enterprise can afford to have three people working in a sprint to prove the synopsis that the business is trying to answer. Can we use data to identify why we're going to be famous for? Because once they know it, they can scale it. What they try to do is a massive project of data asset register to understand the great landscape they have in the business. 90% of the data most corporates have are in your category of swamp. They won't help them go forward, but there's 10% that is totally invaluable. Focus on the 10%.
What else should companies consider about their data and the collecting of it?
If we're talking about data, we learned a big lesson as Oracle that we're very passionate about technology. The messages that we're now giving customers is think about the governance of it. Think about the way you manipulate it. Think about the manageability. Much more start building the building blocks or the foundation components for how you do data ownership in the future. Because what we know, it is going to get more regulated. It's going to be more financially beneficial if you do it. The technology as such, by the time you get there, is going to be doing a lot of the tasks that you're worrying about today by itself. We've already got the capability today to create an autonomous database via a conversation, not even using a tech entry point. We've just about now concluded we can start creating schemas or data assets using a conversation with a business user. So in the future, the technologist's role is much more educating the business on where the gold is that they can utilize for growth going forward. And the business's role is not be scared by technology because it's getting simpler every day.
Final question. What is your favorite search engine then?
What's my favorite search engine? Interesting. When I'm restoring my house, It's YouTube because it's the one that gives me the visual aspect because I want to look at it. For the one when I'm just searching online, I actually don't have a favour. What I do is use multiple search engines. Being a techie, I use multiple ones because what I try to do there is see which one is using adverts to get it to the top of the search versus which ones are actually giving me information of use. One of the things I like to do is much more get to the information I want rather than having to keep reading lots of headings. So I don't have a favoured search engine, but I do use YouTube for my graphics. More recently, I'm now starting to use Twitch.
Thank you very much, John.
There we go.